The Association of Classical and Christian Schools presents Preparing the Ruins, the 2015 Annual Conference Recordings, copyright 2015. If you have purchased this recording, you may make additional copies for use by your school. You may not sell copies of the recording, nor post it on the internet. Learn more about classical Christian education and ACCS at www.accsedu.org.
Great, thank you. Those just coming in, come on up front. Nice tie. Yeah, the front row is open. So my name is Greg Gianforte, and I think I've met a number of you in the past. I serve on the ACCS board with my, and it's great joy to be in this cause. I'm a unique choice to talk about strategic planning. David Goodwin asked me to do this in large part because I've always felt in my business career, I've always said strategic is a euphemism for losing money. Because we get these grand strategic plans and these big documents that get created, and then it's very rarely actionable, and it doesn't actually move the ball down the field. So I want to talk to you about the tactics of strategic plans and how we build plans that actually allow us to get the ball down the field. But first, I'll give you a little background. First, I have to say that my wife and I are parents to four children, and our youngest just went off to college. I'll tell you a story about her in a minute. We have three boys and a girl. They were all raised up in a classical Christian school. I've been chairman of Petra Academy in Bozeman, Montana for a dozen years or so. And for those of you who are in smaller schools, I can still remember when my four children enrolled in the school, the student body went up by 20%. And I'm very pleased to say, I asked last year for your prayers. We were going through a headmaster search. We have found a headmaster. He started next Monday. And we're thrilled. He's a good match. And we will be at right now, enrollment's at 210 students in Bozeman. We have a balanced budget. We finished every year with a balanced budget for the 12 years I've been there. And we've been incredibly blessed. And I want to talk to you about the path we've walked. But there's a lot of experience in the room here as well. That's why I asked you to come forward, because I have some materials, three tools that I've used both in business and in the school to help us put our plan together. I'll refrain from using the word, that euphemism, our plan together, and that have been helpful. And maybe they'll work for you, but as I said, there's a lot of experience in this room. I'd like to have some dialogue. I'm sure there's some people here who have had experiences who can add to the conversation. But first, I want to tell you about my daughter. So just bragging as a dad, she got a 36 on her ACT. Isn't that great? She went off to school in California. She moved into the dormitories. And after being there a couple of months, you know, people from Montana are kind of viewed as rugged outdoors people. Her whole dormitory voted her most likely to survive the Hunger Games. Which, as a dad, I was pretty pleased with that. And then she came home for spring break, and Rachel says, there's a rumor about me going around campus. I said, this can't be good. What's the rumor, Rachel? She goes, well, they know I'm from Montana. They're saying that I killed a bear with my bare hands. And I said, well, Rachel, what did you tell them? She goes, well, I told them it wasn't true. I told them I had gloves on. I was even more proud of her. Anyway, so my background, my wife and I have been married 27 years, again, four kids. I'm a business guy. I've gotten into education in large part because I wanted the best for my children, and now it's become a passion. You know, so as many of you, we get drawn into this because we want something better. I mentioned Petra Academy. It's been an incredibly good thing. I'm an electrical engineer. My master's is computer science. I'm a techie. I've spent my life, my career, my business career starting software companies. My wife and I moved to Montana 20 years ago. We started a little business in our extra bedroom of our home. with no outside capital. And over 15 years, that grew to 1,100 employees. We're the largest commercial employer, one of the only publicly traded companies in the state of Montana in the technology industry. And 3 years ago, we finally convinced Larry Ellison that he should be in the cloud business, and we are one of the first cloud applications companies, and now that business is the kind of the centerpiece of Oracle's strategy for cloud application delivery. And they still continue to hire in Bozeman and continue to be a strong part of the economy there. So that's my background. My wife's an engineer, too. I probably shouldn't say this in a room with educators, but we kind of followed the Henry Ford approach to education in our household, which was you can study anything you want as long as it's engineering. And 3 out of our 4 kids are engineers now or studying engineering. So what I want to share with you are 3 specific tools that we've used, and I've used a lot both in business and in an educational environment, to decide what to do. Because that's at the end of the day, that's what a strategic plan is about. What are we going to do? I don't like these long-term things, because usually you don't know what you don't know. So in business and in education, I found that focus is your friend. Less things are, you know, figuring out what the core things are you need to do is the most important, and then go as far as your horizon takes you. So the first tool I always use is in the notes here. I'm going to follow this pretty closely, is a SWOT analysis. How many people have used a SWOT analysis? I'm sure most of you have. I don't think that this gets enough play. I use this usually in our school board. You know, we meet monthly and deal with the normal monthly things. And then once or twice a year, we have some kind of retreat. Usually late in the year, we look at some longer-term things. Because in a monthly meeting, you really can't consider vision or any of these bigger issues. When we do those, we always start with a SWOT analysis. I will say there is a tendency, because we did one last year, to start with the last one and say, okay, what do we have to change? I would suggest that that's probably the wrong approach. I would always start with a blank sheet of paper, because you want to get, like, the new impressions. And it also is a way to bring new board members up to speed. One of the benefits of the SWOT is you get everybody on the same page. And if somebody says, I think one of our strengths is the wonderful things that are going on in third grade. And somebody else at the table says, what are you talking about? Do you know what's going on in third grade? That's a very healthy conversation to have in terms of getting on the same page about business. I do about 200 mentoring sessions with entrepreneurs in for-profit businesses each year. I always start with the SWOT analysis. And for those of you who are not familiar with it, it's a really simple tool. It's just a 4-quadrant matrix where it's strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats. You can do it on a whiteboard. You can do it on a flip chart. It's usually better if you can fit them all on one thing so you can see them all at once. Strengths, obviously. Strengths and weaknesses are internal attributes of the organization. Those are things that exist inside the walls or within the community itself. Opportunities and threats are things that exist outside the walls or outside the community. And I gave you a sample here. Your school won't be like this. But what this allows us to do, if you do this once a year at a retreat and start with a blank slate, it doesn't take that long to fill it out. In a half hour, people that are engaged day to day can throw things up and get them on there. Then you pull out the one from last year. Right? Now, if some things persist, others don't. But you can learn a lot about what has changed from the prior year to the current year. But the benefit of the SWOT analysis is not what's in the boxes. It's more about the consensus you build with the group as you're putting the stuff in the boxes. Okay? And ultimately, from the SWOT analysis, you decide what are the 1 or 2 or 3 things you're going to focus on over the course of the next year. This is a distillation process so that you don't end up trying to focus on everything, because we don't want to end up like a 1-inch tidal wave, you know, which has no impact whatsoever. And I know in our school, things changed over time, in terms of what we focused on year to year. Early on, we were just trying to balance the budget. You know, survival was our goal. Later on, we were striving for excellence in the classroom. And we're getting to a point now where we're trying to be a lighthouse in the region, not only to continue to sharpen our own skills, but to help other schools come along, right? So the goals change over time. So that's the first tool. It's always a good place to start for a retreat to do a SWOT. That's what I do. I'm not saying it's the only way. It is a way. The second tool I've always used in business, we've used it some in our school, is a tool called OGSM. How many people have used an OGSM in anybody? Okay, not many. This is a tool originally developed by Procter & Gamble. I like it because it fits on one page. This quote has been attributed to Mark Twain. I've been corrected that it actually belongs to somebody else, but I'll share it with you anyway. I don't know who else said it, but Mark Twain said, "I'm sorry this letter to you is so long. I didn't have enough time to write a short one." Pascal? Okay, good. I'm a firm believer in that. Even when our business was 1,100 employees, our annual business plan fit on a single page. Okay, and we use this OGSM format. The best way to get the introduction to this, there's a URL here. There's a 5-minute YouTube video that explains it. And I'll walk you through it on this next page. This box is the OGSM. OGSM stands for Objectives, Goals, Strategies, and Measures. And let me just walk you through it, because it's a pretty simple model. Maybe that's why I like it. But it tends to force you to distill stuff down to a very bare minimum. So the objective, you can see down the bottom, objective, goals, strategies, measures. Down the bottom is words, numbers, words, numbers. Okay, so the words tend to be more inspirational. They represent real decisions you've made about what you're trying to accomplish. But then the numbers are how you keep score. These are specific goals. They have to be things you can say, yes, that happened, or no, that didn't happen. We're going to, a numeric goal would be enrollment will be 176 students in the fall. Okay, that would be a specific goal. Okay, and you could say, yes, that happened, or no, it didn't happen. It's also the case that the objective, at least in our school, the term of these objectives, the length of the term, depends on how long your planning horizon is. So in a mature school that's up and running, I would suggest that your objectives and goals should probably have a 3 to 5 year term. Okay, so what's the top level thing we're going to make happen 3 to 5 years from now? If you're in startup mode, you're not going to set objectives and goals that are that far out. I know in startup businesses I work with, you know, they can see about 2 to 3 weeks out. And why would you plan beyond that? This is what makes these strategic plans such an exercise in fiction writing, a 5-year financial projection. I mean, it's ludicrous. You just don't engage in that. So the objective is generally one, maybe two things. It's not a whole laundry list of things. This is the thing that's going to characterize your school overall over this next period of time. As an example, in our school, at one point in our growth, not that we've given up on excellence in the classroom, but at one point in our growth, excellence in the classroom was the objective. Okay, that was the thing that we were going to focus on primarily. Because we believed that if we had excellent things going on in the classroom, word of mouth would bring more students to the school. We never really invested very much in marketing. We've never had a development director. And yet, it's because we had excellent things working in the classroom. Our work product was excellent. Word of mouth brought people to our school. Okay. As I mentioned early on, the objective is survive till next year. Now, I wouldn't state it necessarily. You could be a little more inspirational in how you write it. But let's not confuse things. That's where some of us are and were. The goals then, typically, the goal is something measurable that will tell you if you met your objective or not. Okay, so this has to be numeric or something that's binary, yes or no, so you can measure did this happen or not. And I will say, doing this OGSM fits on one page, it seems really simple, it's really hard to do. And you'll never do it the first go round. It takes a lot of iteration, but the iteration is what makes the process so helpful for the board and other concerned people that are kind of working through this with you. Then the strategies. Less strategies are better. You can't have more than 5. So ideally you'd have 3. Now, this doesn't mean, of course, you have to do payroll for your employees, right? So these are, but you'd never decide not to do payroll for your employees. So it shouldn't end up on this sheet. These are things that you've decided to do that you had the choice to not do them, okay? This could be, for example, if excellence in the classroom, it could be we want half of our teachers to go to summer teacher training this year. That could be a strategy, okay, because it's a decision. You could decide not to do that. There are very specific things that will help you achieve your objective as measured by the goals. Again, strategies are 3 to 5 things that you're deciding to do as a board, okay, or as a headmaster. And then the measures, typically, each strategy has a measure associated with it. How are we going to know this happened? Did the teachers go to teacher training? That would be the measure. Okay, this is, I don't want to overcomplicate this, but it's a numeric or binary measurement against that particular item. And the other thing that's really important in any kind of planning process is responsibility. So as you identify the strategies, because the heart of a plan are these strategies, decisions you've made, somebody's name has to be next to each one. That's the person responsible for that thing. It could be, now, if your name is next to all of them, it just means you have a lot to do. But it also means that you may question, how can I delegate? Is there one of these I could delegate to a lead teacher? Is there someone on the board that can help with one of these things? You don't want to put so much stuff on your plate that you can't actually achieve it. If you do end up in that position, you have too many strategies. You got a backlog. So putting someone's name next to it does a couple of things. One is it assigns accountability, but it also then helps you determine, do you have too much work? Right? So this is an OGSM. We found these incredibly useful. So when someone says to me, can I send you my business plan for my business? What I want to see is a single page OGSM and the budget that supports it. That is the strategic plan. It's one page and a budget. And that tells you everything I need to know. What are we trying to accomplish? And then what resources are we going to put against it? Anything more than that is kind of window dressing and fluff and other things. Now, there may be documents behind these things. One of the strategies might have another document. But the decision is recorded here on the OGSM. Does that make sense? Does anybody have any questions about the OGSM? Yeah. Yes, so that's a good question. The question was really about how do the strategies relate to the objectives. Generally, you only have one. Generally, you only want one objective. This is the mission of the school. You can think objective, mission. What is that? The strategies are the decisions you've made as a headmaster or collectively as a board to affect that mission. Yes. Yeah. Responsibility is assigned at the strategy level. You could also call them initiatives. You could call strategies initiatives because really they're a set of 3 to 5 initiatives or strategies that you're going to execute with somebody's name next to each one. Okay? Make sense? Now, as in a larger organization, we did have some initiatives under the strategies, but then we could assign responsibility to them. It just depends on how you roll it out. Again, I would encourage you to watch that little 6-minute video on YouTube that kind of describes it. The guy has a funny accent, but he does a good job of presenting it. And then the last thing, I mentioned that the business plan was really the OGSM and the budget. That was the last thing we did, and we were Gene Frost taught us about this. Gene wrote an interesting book. You know Jim Collins, Good to Great? Gene Frost wrote a book. He was working with Jim Collins on Christian schools. And it was specific, it's not classical Christian, but he went around and studied best practices at Christian schools all over the country. And we had him out to help us with the strategic offsite, and it was very, very helpful. And one of the things he suggested we do was to do a financial projection, a pro forma financial projection. Now, I just berated financial projections. But what we found was that getting some view into what the future might look like when we had that kind of horizon was extremely helpful to us. What are our assumptions? Because we've heard, I mean, Larry Stevenson did a great job. You know, we have to charge what it costs, right? We need to fill up the seats because that's the economic model of the classroom. We know these things. We've heard them many times. But we had to kind of put that in a form that allows us to figure out, well, yeah, if we do that stuff, what actually happens? So what we did, and we also found in our school that our secondary didn't have enough students in it because we were getting a lot of atrophy between the grammar school and the logic school, in large part because we didn't have a gym. I mean, you start peeling this stuff back. We underestimated the importance of sports. But to get a gym, you need to be in a new building. And so there were a few steps involved there, right? But what we did was we actually looked at the, and I don't want to scare anybody off by using this word, but we looked at the economics. I was going to say profit, but profit's not the right word. The economics of each of our schools. We looked at the economics of our grammar school, the economics of our logic school, and the economics of our rhetoric school, because we could assign expenses and revenue back to each one of those schools. And we learned that, geez, because of the thin coverage in our logic and rhetoric schools, it cost us more per student there until we filled the classrooms up. And it influenced the decisions we made about where we allocate resources. Now, it's a chicken and egg a little bit. Our logic and rhetoric schools don't have enough students in it, in part because we don't have enough programs. So if we start, we can't starve it to prosperity, right? So we had to figure that stuff out. It turned out that the key thing for us was sports. It may be different in your community. But for a couple of years, one of the strategies was develop community in our logic and rhetoric school through expanded sports programs. And that resulted in higher retention of our students. That's an example of a strategy. So what we did, you can imagine the spreadsheet. And if somebody wants this, my email's on here. Just email me. I'll send you one of our spreadsheets from a couple of years ago. We have a master top sheet. There's a number of worksheets. The top one has kind of the summary data for the whole school. We took any expense that could be attributed to one of those schools and put it on a page for that school. So there was a summary worksheet. Actually, we kept pre-K and kindergarten on the second one. Grammar, logic, rhetoric were combined. And then we had a G&A page. It was all part of the same spreadsheet. And then they rolled up into a top-level view. And we knew, for example, what percentage scholarship we were giving each one of the schools so we could look at tuitions and figure out how it worked out. And it gave us a roadmap. And we'd make assumptions about what do we think enrollment growth is going to do? What are we going to do with tuition? And we could look out a couple of years. And I have to say the Lord really blessed that. We're at the point, last year was the first year we got to the point where our fundraising is exactly equal to the scholarships that we give to students, which was a great step for us. We raise about $200,000 a year, something like that, to provide scholarships because we don't want to turn anybody away. We do it solely based on need. There's no discounts. A lot of the things that Larry talked about that I'm sure many of us are doing is just good practice. So that's the third tool, is a financial projection. The combination of, so the SWOT analysis, just to summarize this, and then I'd love to have some dialogue about what you're doing in your schools, what's working, what may not be working. The SWOT analysis kind of gets your board on the same page, so you kind of have a similar perspective, and if you can't agree on the items, it's worth spending time on that until you get to the point where you at least have some consensus. The OGSM is is where the heaviest lifting is. This is where you set relative priorities for initiatives. But again, you get it to one page. And then the financial projection is kind of how you keep score with what's going on. Does that all make sense? Good. In prior years, I've given talks on board governance here, which is another area of passion for me. I serve on four national nonprofit boards and a whole bunch of for-profit boards, so I have strong views in that area. And again, my goal today is just to be helpful to you in any way that's useful. I'd love to hear about what sorts of things that are going on in your schools. I don't have all the answers, but I'm happy to share what I know, and maybe together we can figure some stuff out. So who has the first question or comment? Want to share something about your school? Thanks for volunteering, Ty. How do you do it in your school? Here, let me give you the mic.
Yeah, actually, I'm Ty Fisher. I'm the headmaster of Veritas Academy in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. And the assumption that you've made, Greg, is a fair one, that in 19 years I would have figured a lot of this stuff out. I've been headmaster of Veritas for 19 years. I'm here at this talk, actually, because another assumption you could make that people at this talk might not have figured it out that well. So we're actually in the midst of doing a new strategic plan. I would be a qualified speaker if the topic was maybe like how to fail at a strategic plan. So, but I really like what you said, Greg, about the link. I think the link, and then I guess here would be my question. When you're getting down to this stuff, who's in the room? Who's in the room when you're figuring out those big objectives? We've had some times when our strategic planning's really been run by our board with some administrative involvement, and it just didn't end up being stuff that could really hit the ground. So you have any advice there?
Yeah, sure. So in a perfect world, the headmaster and key staff, maybe some key teachers, principals, should build the plan. You know, in business, that's certainly what happens. Management puts the plan together. It's then presented to the board for input, review, and approval. I mean, it's hard for me to, you know, most headmasters put a budget together for the year and present it to the board and say, hey, this is the budget for the year. You know, as a board member, I don't know how to consider a budget unless I know what the strategic plan is. Because what assumptions were made? So I think any kind of budget has to be presented with at least a list of objectives. What are we trying to accomplish? Where are we trying to, you know, concentrate resources to make something new happen, different than what happened before? So to answer your question, but I also recognize that in many schools, you don't have a robust staff yet. And I think it's perfectly reasonable for the board to participate with the staff until you get to the point where the organization is mature enough.
Do you have any participation
outside of that? So the question is, would you have somebody outside of that group? I'd say I think there's wisdom in many advisors. Now, you need an arbitrator. That should be a strong... if you have board members involved, that's probably the board chair. If it's faculty and staff, then that's the headmaster. So, but somebody's got to be in charge, otherwise you have a free-for-all. And we've all been involved in those, which we don't want to go back. So we have had external people come in. We've also done, in our board, you know, we've had the chance to travel down to Denver. Our whole board went down to see Valor Christian down there one year because they were doing a lot. They were so focused on college placement and this sort of stuff. And we were just starting to graduate seniors from our high school. And our board wanted to figure out what we needed to do about guidance and this sort of stuff for our graduating seniors. And we've done other field trips together to kind of just get smarter about stuff. So I think there's value in getting input from people. I think for most schools, the board's going to participate at some level in the objective setting. In an ideal world, though, faculty and staff would build a plan, present it to the board for for input and review. The tweaks at that point should be pretty minor. That'd be my thought. Who else has a question or comment? Yes, over here.
Would you mind commenting on the impact of sports? In terms of numbers, we have a robust group of grammar age students, but we have concerns at the logic and rhetoric level. I'm just wondering if you could describe how you came to the conclusion that sports was critical and what the outcome was once you did something about it.
Yeah, so a good question. As I mentioned, we have a lot of atrophy, a lot of attrition between grammar and our secondary. And we made it a practice. We did exit interviews with everyone that left. And there was no one answer. But part of what those families wanted was bigger community. And they wanted exactly what we didn't have, which was we know as our young people go through their developmental stages, they start to want more of the approval of their peers. They need to be part of a community. And although there were many community sports programs, we used to think, well, oh, they play soccer on Saturday morning. They're in that league. They're in Sunday school at their church. They have community there. But we found they wanted identity with the school in some way. And they left for many reasons. They wanted band. We didn't have band. They left for the things. But the most recurrent theme, in the end, any kind of plan forces you to make a decision. We decided sports. And we didn't have much of a secondary. So we started an ultimate frisbee team. Co-ed took 4 pylons and a frisbee. Anybody can do it. The only problem was there was no ultimate frisbee league in the state. So we called 2 other schools and said, how about it? We had an ultimate frisbee league. We beat the other 2 schools. We are now the state champions. And we put a big banner up in the gym. So that was the strategic decision we made. And it built community. And, one kid didn't want to play ultimate frisbee. He became the announcer at the games. So he'd bring a little boom box out. And he was hilarious. And everyone loved to come to the games, in part to watch the game, in part to listen to this young man narrate the thing. Right? Because he had nicknames for everybody on the field. And so, again, I don't know if there's a silver bullet in sports. But the other, we also found that we got community through our drama program. We really limit, again, I said earlier, focus is your friend. In fundraising, we really only do 2 fundraisers a year. Actually, we do 4 things related to fundraising. Because we want to do a few things really well. We only do 1 thing in the secondary, which is our drama, which will get 1,000, 1,500 people from the community to come to. And the kids do a fabulous job. It builds community in the secondary. This year we raised about $75,000 from the play through sponsorships. It's the only time we go to businesses in the community to sponsor something for the school, so we only ask once. My wife makes hundreds and hundreds of phone calls, and they know she's calling, and they know that they're going to talk to her, and they're happy to support. We do a spell-a-thon in the fall with the elementary kids, which really works well because, again, it's related to schoolwork. We have an annual letter to the community, usually in December, just to ask for. And then we put something in the news. We put a wish list in the back of our newsletter, and people, as they have desires to help, can do that. So we've really kind of limited it. But to your question, we got started in sports. We didn't have enough kids to field a basketball team or anything, so we did ultimate frisbee. But now we have a basketball program, and it was a way to kind of jumpstart the program.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Chair of Cary Christian School, and I'm sitting here with our headmaster, Dell. One of the things you can help me clarify in all my time in business and then coming into ministry is it's really hard to define strategy. And when you go out there to all the business schools and ministries and churches, there seems to be these gray areas. So there's strategic thought, and then there's the tactical thought.
Yeah.
So So one of the things that we work through quite often is how does the board continue to cast vision that then allows the administration, with the headmaster, we cast vision as a board, but then allows the administration to go back and the headmaster to go back to then deliver a kind of tactical thought or strategy.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of getting kind of mixed there with what you're saying. Maybe you can help me clarify that.
Yeah, sure. And I think for a school like Cary, where your horizon is longer, it might be a 10 or 15 year horizon, because you can, from a strategy perspective. The Trouton Reese wrote a book called Bottom-Up Marketing, which I'm a huge fan of. They're like the marketing gurus. I wouldn't recommend you get the book because I can summarize it for you in two sentences. The whole book is find a tactic that works and then build a strategy around it. And that's it. But I do think there's a role, particularly as schools get established, to figure out which, the analogy I use is really like mountain climbing. Which mountain do you want to be on the top of in 10 to 15 years? Or for a smaller school, in 3 years? What is the mountain you want to be on top of? That's the strategic direction. That's what's kind of represented in the objective. That's the mission of the school. What do we want to be when we grow up? The strategies, then, are the initiatives are the tactics that are directionally correct. You know, and sometimes if we were climbing Everest, first we have to avoid setting off with a day pack and a power bar because we're not going to make it, right? We kind of have to get up on one of the foothills, establish ourselves, and then identify what the next course is. And for a younger school, it's fine to have a 10 or 15 year vision. It's just that you can't go directly for that summit. You got to find the intermediate hills that you can climb, kind of amass your resources, and then do the assault on the adjacent hill. And that's more what this OGSM is about. It's about from where we are today, depending on our planning horizon, and I would think most schools, because we operate on an annual basis, I recommend a 3 to 5 year objective and goal term and a 1 year strategy and measures term. That gives you an operating plan for the next year. It also happens to coincide with the budget you're going to put together. So the OGSM is essentially a 3 year vision with 1 year tactics on top of a budget. Does that make sense? And that's, you need that long-term strategic goal. I'll give you an analogy from our business. We were in the software business. We helped large consumer businesses deliver better customer experiences. Our mission in business was to, and we used to stick our chest out when we said this, but it was like, our business was to rid the world of bad experiences. And we built the company. It was one of the top 100 websites in the world. We had 8 million visitors a day. We did this for Nikon and Medicare and Social Security Administration, a lot of different companies. But then we had a very tactical plan on an annual basis that, you know, it's like, okay, we need to get a first down this year. What are the plays we're going to run to get the ball 10 yards down the field, knowing that the end zone's still out there? And we had measures around both that longer-term plan and the one-year plan. It's kind of juxtaposing those two. I don't know if that helps. That's the way we thought about it. Yeah. Other comments or questions? Who's next?
One of the questions I have is I've taken a lot of the numbers from the school. They're easy to put into a database and to manipulate them. The hard part is trying to figure out what granularity, and this question was, how detailed do you get? Number two is how do you then use what you have in a given year, maybe a couple past years? What do you do then to project forward so you can start using it as a planner?
Mm-hmm. So this is really a question about how do you use past performance to figure out the future?
That's number one. And two is then how granular do you get?
I think some of the comments, if you were in Larry Stevenson's event earlier, you know, we started getting earlier commitments from our parents. I mean, numbers are one thing to project what's going to happen, but then, you know, a parent gets mad about some decision that gets made, they create disruption, and 6 families leave. You know, I mean, these are the things that happen, right? And there's nothing, I mean, make sure great things are going on in the classroom.
have a headmaster and staff that are in touch with what's going on with the communities, trying to head these things off. But nothing in the numbers are going to tell you that that's going on. Right? So part of this is the numbers are always a rearview mirror, not headlights. We found in our school, generally we do get a bunch of enrollment over the summer. People make decisions. There's two kinds of people in the world, the ones that register early and the ones that register late. But we know we can count on 15 to 20 people signing up over the course of the summer, over this course of summer. So we would never bake all 20 into the budget. We always give it a haircut. We did start doing what Larry suggested, which is start trying to get commitments earlier from families of the year so that the numbers we have are firmer. We've been incredibly blessed. We've focused for a long time on just making sure excellent things are happening in the classroom. And, I think about our enrollment. We'll be over 200 this year for the first time. This past year, we were at 184 this past year. The year before, it was 150, sort of 140. And we've also found every time we do a big expansion, it's not right for everybody. And we do have a little attrition, so you have to bake that in, too. But I don't have one answer for you, except the longer you do it, the better you get. Other comments? Who else is wrestling with a strategy or tactics? Yes. We have a mic coming over here.
Sure, John. We're sitting here kind of thinking, we're from Evangel Class School in Alabaster, and we're kind of thinking that the Lord has showered us with blessings because we have grown in 15 years from 53 to 383 students, and we've never had a strategic plan. And we appreciate ACCS for adding that to the reaccreditation application. So I'm going to ask a question that's going to make us look stupid, because we've never had one. And so you said some things that struck us as completely opposite of how we were approaching it. We were approaching it totally from a board side. What is, for the reaccreditation, just to get, fundamental, what is ACCS looking for? We're preparing to embark upon a behemoth task where we were examining every aspect of the school, 5-year plan for technology, 5-year plan for teacher development, 5-year plan for minimum maximum tuition, 5-year plan for student achievement. Are we overkilling on that?
Okay. I've never been on an accreditation visit, so I'm going to ask Ty to answer that, or
this is getting a little uncomfortable here. But really what we're looking for, I would be much happier to see something like what Greg is talking about that would fit on a page. Mainly, it's not that all that work would be lost that you're doing, and there might be other places in your school where it would make sense to have that, but for a strategic plan, I would say this, having done what you did a couple of times, most of it will be lost. Okay? So I would just say, I would tamp that down and really try to get to the a small number of things that you're trying to accomplish over the next few years that are really going to be game changers for your school. So the best, I'm going to brag on a guy, I don't see him here, but I did Veritas in Richmond, Keith Nix, his accreditation visit this year. They were just ending a strategic plan, so building the next one, but the best one I think I've ever seen as an accreditor, it was about 2 pages long. So it was basically, here are the 3 or 4 things that we're going to be accomplishing. Here's the year we're aiming at that. Here, they had a list of strategic things that they were going to accomplish, and then they had them marked off on the year that they were headed to do those things. They might have had a little bit of stuff behind it, and then of course you got a budget to see that they were really allocating in those ways. Those were, I think that will serve you. It will serve you much better because then in an administrative meeting, you can actually take that sheet out and look at it and you know, dig at it. Whereas in the stuff that we've done in the past, you just weight down your bookshelf with it.
I cannot tell you how much we appreciate this talk and your response.
Yeah, I will say, though, that writing a 50-page strategic plan is easier than writing a 2-page strategic plan. Yeah.
We just kept it as preschool of 8th grade, and we're just about to start another next 3 to 5 year strategic plan, and our board is trying to, we're trying to come up with our vision statement for the next 5 years. But you mentioned going back to it, faculty and staff involvement, as well as the board approval. So, being in New York City, we do have faculty turnover. They come in for 2-3 years, and then they move on to another part of the country and get a job some other school. And it's like it's, but so you want people who are involved in this, obviously, who really knows the school, knows the city, knows all those things. So when you talk about faculty and staff involvement, like, how many, what's the ideal, what type of people that you're looking for? Because we really haven't done that. I was the founder, one of the founders of the school, left for 10, 15 years, and then I came back 4 years ago, again, as the head of the school. Crazy, but I came back. And so we're trying to work through some of these things. So, but we have never had faculty involved in this process.
Yeah. I think it's very helpful to have people that are at the coalface helping with the plan. There's no secret formula. I would say that if you have very high turnover in the school, I would think that's a problem. And it probably ends up being one of your strategies is going to be to have it. We had very high turnover in our staff. You know what we learned? You know, Petra started as a homeschool co-op with moms as teachers who were not paid very well. And as we grew, we started hiring people who didn't have kids in the school, but we still didn't pay them very well. And as a result, there was a lot of turnover. At one point, we saw the turnover as our core issue. And in our strategic plan that year, we made the decision to pay market wages, pay medical benefits, and our turnover has gone to almost zero. Now, we had to pay for it.
We did pay them very well.
Okay. Well, there may be other ways to... you know your school best. I would approach it. It's sort of the business planning process. These retreats are sort of like an architectural charrette, and anybody who can influence the result that is concerned about the mission of the school could potentially be at the table when you do this. As long as you have an arbitration process, you're figuring out who gets to decide what actually goes in the plan. But I think when you put diverse views around the table, even if people are contrary, you get a better result. So I like having different views around the table, even if everybody doesn't agree. Even if there's a little heat and light sometimes, which is okay. So, yeah. Other comments? Questions? Well, thank you very much. And I pray a blessing on every single one of your schools. Thank you.